Meeting up to order. Representative Tice, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from our first meeting?
Madam Chair, yes, I have, and I would like to move them, please.
Representative Tice moves approval of the minutes. Any corrections? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are adopted. Members, as you came into the room, you, I think, should have been handed your district's housing profile, which reminds us that where we live impacts everything. The jobs we can access, the education our children receive, and the well-being of our growing senior population. And I know the challenges are great and the solutions to housing are complicated, but I must say that the work done by the Homes for All Coalition over the last few years has brought us to a hopeful point where we are telling the story in a more comprehensive way and educating everyone in Minnesota. We're all in this together, and so the work that we're hearing about this morning is in large part because there's been there are hundreds of groups. Homes for All Coalition represents hundreds of groups all around the state, and they are with us today. And we are going to, first of all, have an overview of housing advocacy by the co-chairs, I believe. And welcome to the committee, and please identify yourselves for the record.
Chair Hostman and committee, thank you so much for having us this morning. My name is Allison Strike. I'm the deputy director for Carver County CDA and one of the co-chairs for Homes for All.
Thank you so much for having us and giving this opportunity. I'm Senta Leff. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless and also co-chair of Homes for All with Allison.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Ms. Strike, are you starting or who's?
We're going to try to keep ourselves on time here. So, Representative Hausman gave a brief overview of Homes for All. I would just simply add to that that we are a statewide, truly statewide coalition. We have endorsing organizations in every single legislative district in the state. And those organizations now total well over 200. We're at 220 and counting endorsing organizations. A few that I might mention in particular, given our audience this morning, in Northwest Minnesota, we have the Tri-Valley Opportunity Council. In Northeast Minnesota, we have Cloquet Housing and Redevelopment Authority. In St. Louis County, we have the North St. Louis County Habitat for Humanity. In the west central part of the state, Churches United for the Homeless. In central Minnesota, the Central Minnesota Housing Partnership. Representative Tice, that's your district. We appreciate their partnership with us. In southwest Minnesota, there's the Worthington HRA, and then in the southeast part of the state, Partners for Affordable Housing. Representative Munson, good morning. So they are either with us here in the room or with us in spirit, working hard towards a collective agenda. Some brief background about how we got to be where we are about 5 or 6 years ago. I think legislators told us that there was a huge number of housing asks because it's a huge issue everywhere we live. And we were also doing a lot of, you know, competing over a fairly small-sized pie. And so we came together and decided that if we could collectively arrive at one ask of the legislature, we'd be able to make a lot more progress, which is just what we've done. Since 2012, we have secured almost $400 million through our advocacy in new funding for affordable housing across the full continuum, which we'll talk a little bit more about. And we've also protected all the programs on our agenda from any cuts during some periods of pretty deep cut targets.
As a coalition, we recognize that there isn't...
I'll just name who's speaking for the record so that the tape picks up. Ms. Wright.
Thank you. There isn't one kind of housing that fits the needs of all Minnesotans. So the diversity of our endorsing organization speaks to the fact that we do represent the entire housing continuum, from preventing homelessness to producing affordable rental homes to preparing home buyers, and also the relationship between housing and health education, employment, community, and our aging population in every aspect of our life.
To expound on that just a little bit, we know that the private market is overproducing for folks who are able to afford certain levels of rent and drastically underproducing, particularly for folks on the lowest end of the economic spectrum. So these are numbers rooted based out of the Twin Cities, but it should paint a picture. Here in the metro area, you have almost 125,000 households that face barriers like they live with disabilities, they have service needs, they might have been recently released from incarceration. And of all those households that are already facing pretty serious barriers to success in their lives, 87% of them are cost burdened. So they're spending almost 70% of their income, a very small amount of income, on their rent. So for those folks, Allison mentioned, we know, you know, the same solution doesn't apply across the board. For those folks, we're going to be looking at permanent supportive housing, housing that offers the four walls and the roof, but also some services that's going to keep them in place and headed in a good direction. Our agenda supports, as I mentioned, that full housing continuum, so everything from this very low, less than 30% of area median income all the way up to 80% of area median income. When you start to look into the next level of the next income bracket of folks who are in 31 to 50% of area median income in the Twin Cities, that means they might be earning $25,000 a year up to about $42,000 a year. Got a similar number of total households facing some of those very significant barriers in their life. Of those households, 73% are cost burdened, again paying over 70% of their income on housing. So you begin to get a picture of, if you're that cost burdened, something that might be an inconvenience for me or for you can immediately lead to a housing crisis. And if you've got kids, you can imagine how much more serious that crisis could become.
Ms. Wright.
And then as we move up into the 51 to 60% of area median income category, which is approximately 42,000 to 51,000, there are 64,244 households. And so that's our working poor and people with episodic housing crisis or service needs. And of that population, 51% of those households are cost burdened. And so some of the strategies in that particular income category might be low-income housing tax credits, inclusionary zoning, preservation, tax increment financing, and local housing trust funds. And then when we get up to 61 to 80% of area median income, which is roughly 51,000 to 65,000, there's 109,257 households. 35% of those households are cost burdened. And again, some of those same strategies I mentioned before would apply in this income category as well, but then we start to look at some home ownership opportunities as well, including like down payment assistance or land trust programs.
I'm keeping an eye on the clock. I realize we're running a bit over, so I'll try to keep this brief. The short story is that one in four Minnesotans, or nearly 55,000 families, spend more than 30% of their income on housing. Since the year 2000, that number has risen by 60%.
$550,000.
Add another five to that 55,000.
I was trying to.
Sorry about that.
Figure out how that made sense given what you were telling us. So that
apologies to the 555,000 families.
Yes. We know that where we live impacts every aspect of our life. When we have a home, our kids learn, our workers earn, our seniors thrive, and our communities prosper. And at every stage of life, where we live is the foundation for our health, education, safety, and economic well-being.
I think we're going to make this point a couple more times in our last few minutes, but In short, housing security, housing instability, it's not a character flaw, it's a math problem. And we've got all the data. Here in Minnesota, we're rich in data to prove that point. In 83 of our 87 counties, rents are increasing while incomes are decreasing.
So when we talk about housing as an economic driver and we look at the top in-demand jobs, employees working in those fields will find it extremely difficult to afford a home. Our retail workers and those caring for our disabled and elderly will not earn enough to afford a two-bedroom apartment.
I believe that you all have district profiles in front of you.
Did everyone receive theirs? I think as you came in, you were handed your district profile.
So I'm just going to, I'll just call out a couple of profiles, one representing Greater Minnesota and one representing the metro area here. In Greater Minnesota, Representative Teese, I'll just name, hats off to Minnesota Housing Partnership that develops these profiles for us and I think gives a great opportunity to really see what we talk about when we talk about this math problem. So in District 14A, in order, the folks who are working full-time, who might not be able to afford a place to live, are working in your hospitality sectors. They might be preparing your food or delivering it to your table when you go out to eat. They're probably checking out your groceries when you go to the grocery store. Truck drivers might be able to earn median market rate rent in that district. Representative Bierman, I have your housing profile in front of me, a fairly good sample of the metro area here. We've got 1,500 renter households who are cost burdened, spending more than 30% of their income. The vast majority of workers simply can't afford market rate rent. Again, same sort of population, hospitality, food prep. I would call out personal care aides, folks who are earning very small amounts of money and tending to folks with very high needs simply can't afford rent.
So addressing Minnesota's affordable housing and homelessness issues is a means to eliminating the extreme racial disparities in Minnesota. People of color are more likely to experience housing instability, be at risk of homelessness, face barriers to existing homelessness, and lack access to housing and community supports than their white counterparts. And while white home ownership in Minnesota is at a rate of 73%, the home ownership rate for community of colors lags behind dramatically at 22%.
You know, I talk a lot about homelessness being a math problem, but to Allison's point, when you take a person of color here in Minnesota and compare them to a white person earning the same wage, my math problem soundbite goes right out the door. In fact, the color of your skin is a greater indicator of your housing stability than the amount of money that you earn. And that is a topic that we hope that you'll be willing to dive deeper into along with us as we learn and explore policy solutions to those kinds of disparities here in our state.
The number of cost-burdened senior homeowners has risen 45% since 2000. And over the next 20 years, the population of Minnesota over the age of 65 is anticipated to grow by 93%, making senior housing a critical issue.
Representative Munson, was your question to that that slide?
Well, I have a question, Madam Chair, on the financials that were put together for the determining cost burden, because that seems to be really a big driving point about this presentation about how many people can't afford housing in the districts. And I was looking at the, you know, the fine print here to see how the was put together, and it was using U.S. Census data and a survey that was put together in 2016, as our economy was still trying to recover. And I'm wondering if there's any use of more current data because the economy has turned around so quickly and the incomes have risen and unemployment has went down so fast.
And Representative Munson, you see, one of the sources is Wilder Research, and we will have Wilder is right now doing their current research, and we will have them on the agenda. It'll be fresh off the press, and that will be updated then. So I think Wilder's in the room. I think we're about a month away from, mm-hmm. from getting the new information. We'll have them in.
Okay, I look forward to it, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Munson, I would also add we do have some data that is more up to date than the Wilder Triannual Study, and that data is trending in an even more alarming and dangerous direction, particularly for people on the lowest end of the economic spectrum, for folks for whom the economy has not benefited them. Minnesota, as I think has been made clear over the past year through places like the Franklin Hiawatha encampment, our rate of folks who are unsheltered is spiking dramatically. So while the economy may have taken an uptake and benefited some, we're trending in the opposite direction for some of our neediest residents, particularly with children. So in fact, and Allison and I will close here and you can hear from some far more interesting people, 3 out of 4 households that are eligible for federal rental assistance are not receiving it. So another way of saying that, yes, there are some solutions on the table. Yes, for some people, the economy has done good things. But for the vast majority of people who need a little bit of help, it's just simply not available to them given our current level of investment.
And we're moving on now for some personal testimony.
Correct.
Is that right?
So I'm sure you're all aware of the governor's task force, which was a multi-month convening of different stakeholders around the topic of housing. So we're now going to ask our testifiers to talk about how our agenda aligns with the governor's task force report on housing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Monica Nilsson. I have worked with people experiencing homelessness for 25 years. During that time, I carry 2 things with me: hope, because I see homelessness end for people, and urgency, because every day I see people who have not even shelter. I've titled my remarks this morning, "A Mouse at the Mall of America." Tonight, overnight, the Met Council Chair and some council members, the Minnesota Commissioner of Housing, will join me and my colleagues around the state as we count the number of people who are without shelter. From St. Cloud to Rochester to the train tracks steps from here, we will learn how that number compares to 1 year ago, when 1,066 individuals were counted on one night, a 40% increase from 2014. 67 of 87 counties in our state have no fixed emergency shelter, so people come to the metro. All metro counties have inadequate shelter. In Dakota County, 45 people will be sheltered in Apple Valley for the next 2 weeks. Then, no building has been identified to shelter them. Over 300 more beds in the metro will close by spring because winter will be over. They will return to living in public. Shelter doesn't replace housing. Shelter replaces being without a safe place to close your eyes. It replaces living outside, living in the hospital, living in jail, or living in a tent. People seek shelter to maintain their blood sugar, refrain from vomiting with the flu, abstain until they can get into treatment, or restrain the demons in their heads that no one is helping them leave behind. The following is a composite of what we see each night as people give up darkness for the protection of law enforcement in a transit station, or give up lying down for the feeling of warmth. 1 a.m., I just left a homeless teenager sleeping on the light rail. It's where you go when the shelters fill or don't exist in some communities. I worry about her sexual health as she closes her eyes, surrounded by strangers. 2 a.m., the Mall of America is closing its transit station so the homeless dwellers will leave. A senior citizen who goes by Mouse makes her way to the trains. She's carrying her closet on her back. I ask how she got her name, and she replies, "People pass by me all day, but excuse me, but no one says my name. I'm anonymous." 3 a.m., David reports that he has an appointment at the VA in the morning and calls out to no one or everyone to wake him. He has neither minutes on his phone nor a watch to set an alarm. He hopes to get VA benefits. His tooth is killing him. I worry about his chemical health as he takes another sip of vodka to dull the pain in his mouth and heart. 4 a.m., sleep deprivation isn't a disability, but it certainly impacts our physical health and makes it difficult to function at work. Would you be confident as an employer that these able bodies could come prepared to work for you? 5 a.m., it's difficult to tell who on the train is commuting to work and who is home. A homeless 19-year-old tells me, "I have an interview coming up for JCPenney. Do you have any clean socks?" 6 a.m., a homeless Amazon worker tells me, "It's not that you can't find a job, it's that you can't keep one because you keep falling asleep or getting sick." People are suffering. My plea is that while you work to build the four walls of a home, you also work to support the emergency services until those homes are built. I ask that you allow children and adults a safe place to rest their bodies and spirit so that they may work to leave the trauma of homelessness. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And you have some additional testifiers, I believe, with you?
Correct. Next, I'm going to share a video with you from Village of Hope in Bemidji.
I would like to say thank you to the Housing Committee for this opportunity. To share our story and for taking the time to listen. My name is Sandy, and I'm here with Joy and Rachel, and we are employees of Village of Hope. And Village of Hope is an emergency shelter for families. Village of Hope believes that people are experts in their lives, and with relationships, encouragement, and opportunity, people will change their own lives. So I've asked Joy and Rachel to talk a little bit about that.
I moved to Bemidji in 2015 due to homelessness, and I came to Village of Hope to live. I successfully completed the program and the steps, and relationships do matter when it comes to getting things done and having a good attitude and changing what's around you in your community, so I have Sandy to thank for that. So I completed the program, and now I'm an advocate here at the shelter. And I just want everyone to know, like, the leadership training helped me so that I can be able to help others.
I was affected by homelessness as a child when my family lost our home due to a fire. We were displaced from our home for a little over a year. And I moved up to Bemidji for college and have been working at the shelter for about 5 years now. And I'm here because I've experienced this, and I can relate to the struggle and care about having relationships with people who also have experienced what I've experienced, and I care about this cause and want to help people.
So we can't do this great work alone, and we can't do this work without support, and that's why we really appreciate the Homes for All and the agenda that we are putting through. And so I encourage you to listen to the stories, to internalize the stories, and help us make a difference.
And we're joined by someone else at the table. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. I'm Buffy Baronic, the Deputy Executive Director of SEMSHRA, Southeastern Minnesota Multi-County Housing and Redevelopment Authority. Good morning, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. We operate in six counties in southeastern Minnesota: Goodhue, Wabasha, Winona, Dodge, Houston, and Fillmore County. We own and operate almost 500 rental units and administer about 400 rental assistance vouchers. We also administer small cities development grants to rehab homes, commercial businesses, and rental properties as well. Our mission is to provide affordable, safe, decent, sanitary housing to the elderly and individuals at 115% of state median income and below. I'm here to testify today about how the first three recommendations of the governor's task force align with legislation and how that legislation impacts our clients that we serve and the communities that we live in. The governor's task force identifies the need to create dedicated, permanent funding for affordable homes in addition to current funding sources. In order to achieve this, there must be a broader and stronger public commitment to the urgent need for more homes. Homes for All supports the Tax Credit Contribution Fund because it promotes public-private partnerships by encouraging local businesses and neighbors to invest in their community. The program relies on public support to provide low-cost financing to developers of affordable housing. This simple and flexible tool enables public participation and investment to solve housing needs in communities across our state. SEMSHRA is one of 60 businesses and organizations, including the League of Minnesota Cities, the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Rochester EDA, that endorse the Tax Credit Contribution Fund. My organization, SEMSHRA, has linked their 2019 agency standards to the governor's task force priorities as well. We are committed to develop or preserve 24 units over the next 2 years. We need the Tax Credit Contribution Fund to accomplish this goal. Outstate Minnesota needs a program that minimizes the use of consultants and does not take 3 to 4 years to access funds. We do not have the luxury of administrative economies of scale that the metro and large developers have. Our local businesses are demanding housing for their workers and are excited about this new funding opportunity. We have the buy-in. We just need the tool to develop the housing. Second, Homes for All's bonding request will help meet the task force goal of expanding existing rental rehabilitation programs that preserve the critical rental assets that we already have. $300 million in bonds for housing will substantially increase support for rehabilitation of public housing and preservation of rental housing with federal rental assistance and manufactured housing, in addition to producing more supportive housing, senior housing, and single-family housing through community land trusts. Scattered throughout Minnesota's 87 counties, there are thousands of privately owned, federally assisted rental housing units. As these properties age, there is risk that these units may be lost due to deterioration or conversion to market rate rents. Housing infrastructure bonds provide the capital needed to ensure that properties can remain intact and affordable for decades to come. General obligation bonds provide investments in aging public housing stock. Minnesota's lowest income residents, including seniors, persons with disabilities, and families with children, whether it's scattered site single family housing or apartment high rises, it's imperative that we preserve this housing stock. The cost to produce what we lose is too great. SEMSHRA has used bonding to preserve our assets. Bonding has rehabbed elderly, disabled, and low-income housing in southeastern Minnesota. SEMSHRA's total capital need for 110 units exceeds $1.8 million for 2019. HUD will provide us with less than $200,000 this year. SEMSHRA has utilized the public housing bonding bill for roofs, windows, and hopefully a new elevator this year. We need this tool, and we'll continue to access these funds to maintain our investments in a responsible and cost-effective way. In addition to preservation, bonding is an extremely useful tool for new production, and we need more of it. Through bonding, Sempsure has created rental housing across southeastern Minnesota, 16 units of elderly housing and 12 units of low to moderate income housing in Winona County, 110 units of elderly and disabled housing in Wabasha County, 69 units of elderly and mixed income rental housing across Goodhue County, 16 units of moderate income housing in Dodge County. In addition, bonding has provided us the opportunity to create single, affordable, and multifamily building sites in the cities of St. Charles, Kenyon, and Wabasha. Finally, the third recommendation. The Governor's Task Force says that 300,000 new homes across all types, prices, and locations must be built by 2030 to stabilize prices and meet demand. Local government is a key component to success. A one-time investment in a local housing trust fund match will significantly expand the resources available to local leaders to address the home affordability needs in our communities. To grow and sustain their economies, cities are looking for creative ways to make housing development work. Local housing trust funds are funds established by local government dedicating local public revenue for housing. Local housing trust funds are a consistent, flexible resource for housing within a local jurisdiction. Trust funds help communities leverage public and private resources and jumpstart projects that draw investments and jobs. Local housing trust funds enable communities to prioritize developments that maximize the benefit to the local community. Other local leaders across Minnesota are eager to address housing challenges in their communities. Minnesota Housing Partnership, whose board I sit on, has experienced exponential growth in demand for technical assistance to help local communities establish these trust funds. For example, Goodhue County has provided $200,000 from Sempsure's HRA levy to the Housing Trust Fund. The Goodhue County Tactical Plan has two main functions: rental and elderly housing development and workforce housing down payment assistance. Goodhue County is conducting a housing study and has access to buildable sites, and we will use that housing trust fund to create new housing as early as 2020 by filling the gap with those funds. The easy creation, easy access to funds, and local control of the money was key in obtaining buy-in and creation of the housing trust funds in southeastern Minnesota. Leaders in Winona, a growing community, identified creation of the local housing trust fund as an important tool to support housing needs. The city manager says a state matching fund could make a crucial difference in helping communities leverage local investment. Communities like Winona can use local housing trust funds to help attract new talent and remain a viable community. Winona is ready to step up and invest to support business growth and ensure community members can make ends meet. A state matching fund would give Winona the leverage we need to jumpstart those local investments. Madam Chair, committee members, thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We don't have any no questions right now, but we'll Representative Juergens.
Thanks, Madam Chair. On the last screen there, I got to put my glasses on, built 300,000 new homes by 2030 across all types and locations to stabilize prices and meet demand. If we were just average that out, it's about 30,000 per year. What is the average now? And would this be 30,000 per year on top of the current build ratio? Or
we may not have the right person at the table right now.
Okay.
We might have to get back to you on that.
Okay, thanks.
We'll follow up.
Okay. And then if you get it to us, we'll distribute it to the committee. Perfect. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess more just a comment. When I hear, you know, that we need to build these many homes, part of my question is, at what cost point do we need to build them for them to be affordable? Because it's really getting hard to build an affordable home. Last week I talked about talked to a builder just last week, and what used to be an entry-level home is now at $250,000.
Yeah.
So how do we get those costs down? When you talk about partnerships with cities, a large part of why some of these homes are so much is the permitting process. It's just costing so much to get a permit. A friend of mine who does multi-housing said, it's $1 million in permits before the shovel hits the dirt. We can't have that. I mean, we need to look at some of those ways, too. How do we get that down? And so I would say that when you're talking to cities, suggest or maybe approach them about how do you keep the costs down for builders. I just don't see 300,000 homes being built in that time with the lack of workforce we have and with the costs of what affordable housing is now. We just don't have, you know, you're shaking your head, entry-level homes any longer because the costs have gone up so much. Just the basic cost of building that home. So I just want to bring my concerns, my comments to when you guys are talking, when you all are talking, just challenge cities, counties, you know, how do we keep the costs down as well? Because it's something that in the building industry, we're fighting all the time. I mean, they add all these different codes. The last one added $7,000 just in heating. And it's just really hard to do. And when I see the numbers, it's like, I just don't see it happening. We just don't have the workforce to do it either. So I just feel like, what do we do?
I
appreciate the work you do because you're sitting there with the same issues I'm bringing up, and I just really hope that somewhere along the line we can figure out some solutions and how to build affordable housing again.
And we are going to revisit that at a future meeting, but I don't know if you want to comment any further.
I was just going to say thank you for your comments.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Osmond, and first of all, I want to thank this current testifier for bringing up the actual needs of greater Minnesota. I was disappointed when an earlier testifier brought up the stuff of the metro area, classifying it the same way across the state. It is not. Greater Minnesota is totally different than what's happening down here. Some of the regulations that the state put on, and also at the county in the city level, like Representative Tice was talking about, is hurting the affordable housing market. We have some cities that for whack and sack fees, it's $10,000 on top of the just on the permitting just to hook up the city water and sewer. That drives the cost of housing out of sight for most first-time home buyers. We really need to sit down and take a look at the rules and the regulations and the requirements and look at the fees that some of these areas are charging to get the cost of housing down.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a brief comment to Representative Tice's point about our interaction and work with cities. And I come from a city council in the city of Richfield. And as we've worked to in the space of affordable housing, a relatively small community, the desire to leverage funds is a huge need. And so that's why a state match for the Local Housing Trust Fund is a great way, I think, that we can partner with local communities, leverage the resources of the state to help move forward with affordable housing. I expect that's something that we would hear from cities all across the state, especially smaller communities that don't have the ability on their own to really engage in this. And to Representative Johnson's point about the needs in greater Minnesota, I definitely would agree that there are differing challenges, but there are across the state housing challenges. And what I appreciate about the agenda we're hearing about is it's truly a statewide agenda responding to the unique challenges in urban, suburban, and greater Minnesota. And so, you know, as we hear about this agenda, I think it is important to keep in mind, as Representative Johnson noted, that the challenges are different. But what is true is there are challenges across the state, and we need to pursue statewide solutions that are tailored to the various areas. So, thank you.
Any further comments?
I would just add there is not one solution. There's multiple solutions. We need to look at the codes. We need to look at different models of housing. Maybe it's not all stick-built houses. Maybe the new affordable model. I just read an article in the La Crosse Tribune, $70,000 for a manufactured home. We might have to look at different models. And just another input or insight from outstate Minnesota, the communities that I work with, the counties that I work with, some of them are more progressive. Some of them have already started their housing trust funds. Some of them are waiting for the state. They're waiting to see what direction the state's going to go. Is this important to the state? They are looking to you to say that this is important.
Thank you. Any further comments before we move on to two? I think we have a principal of the St. Paul Schools here. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the time to speak. My name is Ryan Vernosh, and I am the proud principal of Maxfield Elementary School here in St. Paul, which continues to serve the amazing children of the Rondo community for 128 years and counting. I'll touch a bit on the governor's task force goal number 4, increasing home stability, and goal 5, linking homes and services. But first, some of the background on why this is needed. A couple of weeks ago, a mom of 3 came into my office in tears. She and her children were kicked out of her apartment and were forced onto the streets after emergency funding for a hotel ran out. She couldn't find a shelter that could take her family in. When she was finally able to find a shelter possibility, she had to take yet another day off work to finalize child care requirements. That's when her employer told her that if she did that, she may lose her job. Through her tears, Mom said, "Do I chance not having a job to find a shelter for the night, or do I go to work and have another night on the street? I can't win. What am I supposed to do?" Then came the words that still keep me up at night. "I don't care about me. I just want my baby safe." Now let's rewind back to another moment. A different family, same dire situation. Mom comes in with their twin kindergartners and shares, "We were just kicked out of our apartment last night. They forced us out. We had to sleep in our car last night and wait for the school to open. We need help. We didn't even have time to get our stuff. Look, Mr. Vernosh, my baby only has one shoe. My baby only has one shoe. I just want my baby safe. That is why I am here, what I'm here to ask for. A commitment to ensure to keep our baby safe, safe from the devastation that homelessness brings upon children. It would be one thing if these were isolated stories, but the sad reality is that they are not, and it cuts across all areas in the state, urban, suburban, and certainly greater Minnesota. These are just two examples from a long list that we hear at just my school, two stories out of thousands of similar ones across the state. At our school, about 25 to 30% of our scholars experience homelessness at some point every year. As a school, we operate on the reactive side of the housing equation when all preventative systems have fallen short. As such, we know that every first of the month we need to be ready to greet more families that are newly homeless. We need to ensure our food pantry is stocked, that our counselor and social workers are available, and that our partner agencies are ready for more referrals. It's like clockwork. We believe right now, actually, we've had at least 10 referrals for children who are now homeless at our school since January 1st. The impact of student homelessness is overwhelming. Chronic illness, sleep deprivation, anxiety, poor attendance, increased agitation, increased need for mental health supports, difficulty in concentration, hunger, and much lower school achievement as compared to their peers with stable housing. I see the impact on these faces of our children every morning when I greet them off their vans. Sometimes they need to take a nap before they go to class. Sometimes they need to get a change of clothes from our supply. Sometimes they need an extra breakfast. Sometimes they just need a tight hug and reassurance that they are beautifully brilliant and the challenges they are experiencing are not their fault. The children I am privileged to serve are resilient beyond belief, though they shouldn't have to be. Homelessness is a solvable problem. Ending homelessness means that we prevent it whenever possible, and when it's not possible, the experience of homelessness is rare, brief, and non-reoccurring. The good news is that Minnesota has a track record of solutions that work. It will, though, take the political will to prioritize this work, and I believe that this committee, this legislature, and this governor has the bipartisan will to do it. I applaud the recommendations put forth in the Governor's Task Force on Housing, especially on the goal areas of increasing home stability and linking home and services. Expanded access to rental assistance, increased emergency shelter options for families, supporting families against unscrupulous landlords, and increasing funding for Homework Starts with Home will go a long way to eradicating homelessness in our great state. It certainly will help our families experiencing homelessness at Maxfield, and we have seen that happen through our partnerships with St. Paul Promise Neighborhood and a variety of rental assistance programs. Madam Chair, members of this committee, thank you again for your time, your commitment and service. I truly believe that together we can enact powerful and meaningful change for families and the children of Minnesota, because no child, not one, should ever have to wonder where they lay their head at night. Thank you.
Representative Hornstein has a question.
Thank you, Principal Vernouche. That was very moving and powerful, and I feel even greater sense of urgency to address this particular piece after your testimony. In addition to homelessness, I've also familiar with some of the data from Minneapolis. There's a very large percentage of families that are also moving in the course of a year. Do you have anecdotes or stories or, even data about that particular piece in addition to the homeless question?
Yes, Madam Chair. We have one of the highest rates of transition and highly mobile students in our district. I'd have to double check on the current numbers, but usually around 30% mobility, sometimes as high as 40%. We see it every day, new students coming in, students leaving. When we have looked at our achievement data, when we have students who we have from kindergarten through grade 5, they are dramatically outperforming any other student group. And it's telling at our school in particular that we often don't even have enough fifth graders in that cohort to draw really meaningful statistical sample, because so few have been with us since kindergarten. So the rates of mobility is staggering, and it has a huge impact on the services we're able to provide as a school.
Thank you.
And to that point, the University of Minnesota has done research, which I cite often, and that is on achievement of children. And by the time a child has reached the fifth grade, if they've been homeless or highly mobile, they're achieving at the level of a second grader who's been in stable housing. That's the impact. So all of this funding we provide for education has, if we also figured out how to find a safe place for them to sleep on a regular basis, we would enhance academic achievement. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And real quick, first of all, thank you, Principal Vernouche, for the work that you're doing. The question that I have is, what are the demographics of your population? If you could give us a quick idea of what that is.
Mr. Vernouche.
Certainly, Madam Chair, Representative Fisher. Our school, we have about 98% of our students live in poverty, free and reduced lunch. We're about 75% African American. And then roughly an equal percentage of that last quarter of Somali, Karen, Hmong, and Latino students. And I believe maybe 7 or 8 white students.
Fisher?
Just clarification, when you say 7 or 8 Caucasian students or percent?
Students. So the percentage is under 1%.
Thank you.
I was struck by the courage of the two mothers that you cited, because as I talked to the superintendent of the Roseville School District and asked how many children homeless in the Roseville District, he cites a number, but then he goes on to say, we think it's more than that, but many people, when they suddenly find themselves in this circumstance, they never thought they would, and they're too embarrassed, really, mm-hmm. to tell anyone. But what I heard you saying is, these are mothers who ask for help. And I think we read about you in the newspaper, did we?
Madam Chair, yes, there's an article about on Minnesota Public Radio about the housing crisis that we're experiencing at our school. And to your point, the numbers that I shared of 25% to 30% are the students that we know for sure because they have shared with us and are accessing our district-level services for youth that are homeless. We know the number is actually higher than that from stories of students who are, we know are living in cars, that are living on the Green Line, that are going from couch to couch to couch, so the numbers are actually higher than the statistics I shared.
Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
I think we have answered all the questions. And we're moving on to, I think, more personal testimony. This is Jeff Washburn. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Jeff Washburn. I'm the executive director of the City of Lakes Community Land Trust in Minneapolis. I'm here this morning to speak to the last task force recommendation tied to affordable home ownership. On the drive over this morning, I was listening to the radio, and it was cited that Twin Cities have now seen the highest median home price in history at about $265,000. And while that's a metro a statistic, what I hear from my colleagues statewide is that it's just as hard, if not harder, in greater Minnesota to create affordable home ownership due to the fact that it costs just about the same cost and wages are lower in those communities, so the gap is even arguably larger in some of our greater Minnesota communities. Our organization, Community Land Trust across the state, Habitat for Humanities across the state, manufactured housing, community action programs across the state, all make up a part of the affordable housing continuum here in the state, focused on affordable home ownership programs and funding. We represent, I think, an increasingly an unfortunate important part to the affordable housing spectrum. In years past, households could arguably jump from affordable rental into home ownership, and that no longer is the case. Excuse me. Here in the state, for folks to jump from rental to home ownership, increasingly some sort of affordability assistance is needed to bridge that gap. And that gap is larger and larger every year that goes by. And while the Twin Cities median home price has jumped to $265,000, I think it's important to note that we're still a very, very affordable metropolitan area compared to a lot of our comparable larger metropolitan areas. The Portland area median home prices are over $400,000. Denver is now over $500,000. Seattle over $800,000, and won't even speak to San Francisco. And so while it feels incredibly expensive right now, and we'll see ups and downs, I don't think that we're going to have opportunities moving forward where we're going to be able to create a ton of affordable home ownership without making some serious investments. And I would argue that making the investment today is a much better investment than waiting. And my colleague in Seattle, who runs a land trust there, they're putting over $450,000 in affordability investments to create affordable housing or affordable home ownership in their community. And I just think let's create it now, especially given that the organizations that over the last 3 years have created over 500 affordable home ownership units in the state, a good portion of those are permanently affordable homes. Made available through community land trusts and habitats to have long-term affordability provisions built into the home ownership. The collective organizations that represent the affordable home ownership part of the continuum serve on average 54% of the median incomes in their communities, and we're also serving at a rate of 7 times what the local home ownership rate is communities of color in those communities, or about 57% of the households collectively that we serve across the state are community of color households. Coupled with the comments made earlier by Allison, I think we have a really strong network of providers in the state that are chipping away at that disparity, but it's going to take a much larger investment than that to really, really make a difference. My last comments are there's also a lot of households in the state that if they could purchase a home are ready to make a home purchase. They have the credit, They're just looking for those access points into affordable home ownership. And again, as we look at affordable housing as a continuum, making sure that folks that are in affordable rental have a place to move up that continuum is really, really important so that we can create space up and down that continuum. And I think it's, again, very important to see affordable home ownership as a critical and increasingly critical component of that affordable housing continuum. For the last several years, organizations that apply to the state have consistently come in at requests of 2 to 3 times that of what have been funded. We have the capacity to serve folks. We just need, as was stated earlier, an opportunity for the state to put the funds out there and for our local communities to step up and match those funds so that we can create more home ownership before it gets increasingly cost prohibitive for us to do so. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members.
I see no questions. Thank you. And now we have Jordan May from Red Lake. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Bonjour, hello. My name is Jordan May. I am executive director of the Red Lake Homeless Shelter located on the Red Lake Band at Chippewa Indians Reservation. I've been the executive director and vice chair of the Minnesota Tribal Collaborative to Prevent and Homelessness since September of 2014. I moved to Red Lake 10 years ago and immediately started working for the homeless shelter as an on-call advocate in 2009. I worked my way up to part-time advocate, then a full-time administrative assistant, and through hard work, eventually executive director. I was a full-time college student while I was working full-time, going to work early, leaving late every day, and during that time, I was actually homeless. I was living in my mother's breezeway between her garage and house that did not have heat or electricity because I had nowhere to go. I eventually moved in with my girlfriend's parents and had to sleep in their basement. We had several people doubled up in that house, which is very common on the reservation because there is not enough housing. My girlfriend became pregnant, and we had an infant staying in the basement with us, so I knew I had to find housing for our family immediately. I harassed the housing authority and eventually became housed. I was working as the admin assistant and was promoted to executive director. I had a big learning curve and struggled with the work at first, but learned and adapted to the extra workload. During this transition, it helped me realize the struggles that people face daily while they stay at the homeless shelter and are working, and working there has positively impacted my life and the clients I serve in many ways through the care and support that we show for each other. The knowledge and experience I learned at the homeless shelter has helped groom me into a community leader. And because of the limited resources in our rural area in Greater Minnesota and the reservation, I decided to run for public office to help even more people. The homeless shelter houses between 250 to 300 people annually, consisting of families and single adults. We have multiple grants with the Department of Human Services, Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and Office of Economic Opportunity that allows our program to provide various direct services and rental assistance vouchers that house homeless people in our homeless shelter. These grants have such a big impact in our clients' lives because after they receive services, they are no longer homeless and can provide a better life and future for their families. These grants are greatly appreciated, but it's just not enough funding to really impact the homeless population in our rural area because there's just a lack of housing, funding, resources. Agencies and programs like the homeless shelter really need additional funding to help the homeless population. I would like to thank all of you for your time and listening to my story of being homeless to help and house many homeless people through years of work at the Red Lake Homeless Shelter. I hope all of you here will support Homes for All for additional funding for homeless programs so we can continue to help the homeless population in our rural area for many years to come. And I just want to add, I mean, you know, I was a successful story of being homeless to, you know, finding housing and maintaining employment to actually provide more services to actually become the director of a homeless shelter. Not all people, you know, have this same story, and these grants and different, you know, direct services greatly impact their lives and, you know, into getting housing and maintaining housing. So that's why, you know, I want to ask your support for Homes for All.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now we have Julie Jepson. Oh, this is a video.
A video, correct. Sorry, technical difficulties.
I'm Julie Jepson, Executive Director of Stepping Stone Emergency Housing. Stepping Stone is a 66-bed facility and the only homeless shelter for single adults in the Smack region. Support services funding allows us to be more than just a typical homeless shelter. ESP funds provides 1 to 7 nights of emergency shelter and crisis relief. Housing supports allows us to go beyond the crisis. It provides us the opportunity for providing case management, jobs, and housing.
I have to exit the slide. This is the other slide.
I'm Julie Jepson, Executive Director of Stepping Stone Emergency Housing. Stepping Stone is a 66-bed facility and the only homeless shelter for single adults in the Smack region. Support services funding allows us to be more than just a typical homeless shelter. ESP funds provides 1 to 7 nights of emergency shelter and crisis relief. Housing supports allows us to go beyond the crisis. It provides us the opportunity for providing case management, jobs and housing club, medical clinics, plus much, much more for those who need up to 6 months of shelter. Long-term homeless support services allow those coming out of Stepping Stone or those off coordinated entry to be stably housed, but we provide the case management for them. I want to introduce to you Michelle. Michelle here at Stepping Stone is a shelter advocate.
Hi, I am Michelle. I am a shelter advocate at Stepping Stone's Emergency Housing and a regional expert for the Heading Home Leadership Circle.
In Michelle, I recognized her determination, work ethic, and leadership skills and knew that she had to be part of the Stepping Stone team.
And just under 3 years ago, I was a resident at Stepping Stone. I received funding, but I took a job as a bus driver and then as an Uber driver. I am fully self-supporting in all avenues. I have my own apartment, I have my own vehicle, I take care of all my utilities and my food. Outside of my own paycheck, all of my funding comes from me, for me, by me. By working at Stepping Stone Emergency Housing, I get to give back to the very place that helped me get where I am today. I get to make a profound and positive difference, leading by example and igniting hope.
We gave Michelle an opportunity. She rose to that challenge and she does the work. With more resources, we have more people like Michelle in our world. Thank you for supporting Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, Homes for All, the Heading Home Together Leadership Circle, Regional Expert Network, and those of us like Stepping Stone who do the work every day. Support your community and support success.
What I'm struck by when I look at Michelle's face is the end of the story when she has that good news that everyone they eventually want to move through those hard times, and she was taking such pride in telling us that she's now self-sustaining. She has a job, she has her own place to live, and she can support herself. And you just see, yes, there was a very hard point in her life, but the delight she has in telling us that she's moved to a different place. We don't always hear that good news, but it's uplifting when we do. And we're joined now by, please identify yourself for the record, from City of Lakes.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Barbara Lightsey. I am here to speak to my experiences as a homeowner through City of Lakes Community Land Trust. 13 years ago, 2006, I needed to buy a home. I was paying rent, which was exceeding my $14,000 year Social Security. I was referred to the land trust and found a program that fit with my principles, my morals, and my finances. I was able to buy a house. Fortunately, I got the last 40-year loan through the state of Minnesota. I was able to buy a house of my choice in North Minneapolis, which has served me well. And when I pass on, not move, that house will be available for someone in my position. Nine times out of ten, they'll probably have children. Mine were grown. It's a three-bedroom, lovely house that will be there, and it will service family after family because it'll always be part of the land trust system. That's the land trust deal. When I bought my house, $14,000 would have bought me a garage door, and that's the truth. You know, a 2006 prices were really sky high. Not quite as high as they are now, but they were high. And with the land trust paying $65,000 of that mortgage, of that offering price of the home, my payments were affordable. Now, while I now am at the great state, thank goodness, of Social Security, of having an income of $20,000, my mortgage is still $812 per month. This program is necessary for low and moderate income families and individuals to have an opportunity to have home ownership, to pay taxes, to live with the same level of dignity that people of higher incomes have, and contribute to their community as well as provide the type of lifestyle we choose to have our families. The land trust is, I won't say a godsend, but basically for me it was. But it's a program that has been in existence and will be in existence and should always be in existence, because there are always going to be low and moderate income people who want to be homeowners but who are going to need some assistance. I can pay my taxes. I can pay my insurance. But I could not have paid that in addition to the full asking price of the home I purchased. So I would ask that home ownership always and continue to be a priority for the state of Minnesota, because everyone doesn't want to be a homeowner, but there are those of us who do at various junctures of our lives. So with that, I'll close because I talk too much.
And what you experienced, of course, is with rental, there is not a lot of control. It can go up and up and up, and soon you
today,
find yourself.
Today I could rent a one-bedroom apartment, and I would pay more than I pay with my mortgage. I would be at least $950.
Which is a homeownership.
So I would be close to being in that homeless category, except I do have children who like me. So that would save me.
Well, there is that. I think we have no questions. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for hearing me.
I think Ms. Leff, are you picking it up from here?
I think so. I believe we have time mm-hmm. for questions and answers. I would just say, for my part, in closing, there are so many more people who would like to be here with us today, that because of where they live in the state, their geography, or what their working hours and wages and restrictions may be, aren't able to join us today. But you have the commitment from me and from everyone in this room that we will work hard all session long to bring those voices directly to you in whatever way we can. I hope that what you walk away with today are not only the powerful personal stories, but the very foundational understanding that where we live impacts everything, and that if you care about education, you have to care about housing. If you care about workers, you have to care about housing. If you care about seniors, if you care about local economies, you have to care about housing first, because it's an essential ingredient for success in every single other area. And we'll continue to push that and have people directly impacted by the effects of not investing in that basic foundational piece of our infrastructure throughout session. So,
Representative Howard has a question.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Leff, one question. You spoke to the broad coalition. I'm wondering, could the committee actually get a full list of all of the partners at some point? I think that would just be valuable for us to just see that list of the folks that are across the state.
We'll get that from you and distribute it to the committee.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, we have that list, and we also have it. It might be before you. Oh. It probably needs some updating, but you can also see geographically where those partner organizations are to get a sense of how truly statewide our voices
Thank you.
Are.
It's
yes.
apparently in some packets and not in others.
Okay.
So we'll make sure that that it's available to everyone. I see no other questions. So Homes for All has talked about all of the goals that they are reflecting from the governor's task force. And my understanding is you have a press conference at 11 o'clock where you will announce there's one bill that addresses the entire agenda. What are your solutions to each of these goals? And that will be announced at 11 this morning in a press conference. And we'll eventually be seeing that bill here in committee, I believe. So we've gotten the background today, and then we'll have an opportunity to see the solution. Representative Salk.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I was wondering if the Minnesota Housing Partnership folks are available for a question on their handout. I think I know the answer, but I wanted to be a little more certain. But if there's nobody, I can find it later on, that sort of thing.
Questions to the handout?
It's a fairly rudimentary question.
Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the record, please.
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Libby Murphy. I'm the Deputy Policy Director at Minnesota Housing Partnership, and I hope that I can be able to answer your question.
I'm sure you'll be able to do this. This is to assure my brain that what I'm looking at is that I'm interpreting correctly. So on these data sheets that we have, there's a representation down at the bottom which says essentially it's reflecting what a job will pay for and or where it would be in the scheme. It's the bottom right-hand quadrant of the data set. I'm assuming that that's a representation of a single job and where that would lay then on that data representation, as opposed to what we know most families are doing, which is working two jobs in order to create at least income for the family that would move past their housing number. That's a reality that's true. And I don't quibble with what the graph is representing. I just want to be certain that I'm interpreting what it intends to say.
Ms. Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Salk, that is correct. This is for an individual. We know, though, however, that there are many individuals seeking affordable housing. There are many households with one income, possibly because one of the other able-bodied individuals in that household are providing child care, or there's a disability in the family. So there's many different situations that households experience. But yes, that is correct. There will be households looking for affordable housing that are dual income, and this is general information about median salaries for these jobs and median home prices.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anything further? And I would invite any of the other Homes for All coalition members, if you think we've missed any part of the agenda, we'll be seeing the bill later, but we've got the background now. No further questions? Thank you very much for being with us this morning. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.